Friday, May 21st, 2021. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. Living a better life means sweating a 65-1 right down to the last match. That's right. At the beginning of the of this soccer season, back in the fall, I placed a wager, a $50 wager on Lille. That's a French team for those of you unfamiliar, for Lille to win Ligue 1, Ligue 1 in France. The final match day of that season comes up in just a couple days, May 23rd, and I will be sweating the 65-1 ticket. Let me tell you what I did with this. You don't have to be into soccer betting to appreciate this. This is definitely, you can, I think any sports bettor can appreciate this scenario that I'm in. 65-1. I got a $50 wager on Lille to win the Ligue 1. Just a couple months ago, I kind of rediscovered it, right? I'd kind of, you know, it was a busy season, NFL, yada, yada. Everything settles down. I go back to look at, like, what's in my portfolio. Boom, I got the 65-1. And wouldn't you know it, Lille is neck and neck with PSG, Paris Saint-Germain, for the league title. They have a really great stretch, and PSG drops a point or two, and Lille takes the lead. I managed to hold off on hedging this bet. Every week, I'm like, I need to hedge, because PSG is just flat out better. They're one of the best clubs in the world. It wouldn't take, you know, I can expect them to win and get 3 points with every game. Lille, I was unsure if they were going to be able to do that. I sweated this the whole way through. I managed to be disciplined and not put in a serious hedge. Or I should say, I put in one hedge for this. I took PSG at 2-1 a couple weeks ago to win the league as sort of my hedge. But here's what I did. Because I placed it with a legal operator, a lot of them are doing this where you can cash out of the bet and for, you know, 1 or 2% surrender of the, we all know how much I love a good surrender, the surrender of the bet. And here's why I did that. DraftKings had a promotion in the state that I am currently in at the time that I made this wager. They had what's called a big bet promotion. Bet $600 or more and get a $300 free bet upon settlement of the wager. Doesn't have to win or lose. Doesn't matter. The terms state that you get the $300 wager simply for placing the $600 wager. So here's what I did. Here's what's happening. If Lille wins on Sunday, I win this. It's going to be upwards of almost $3,300. I'm saying numbers here only because I'm in a really good spot and I want people to sort of appreciate that these kind of situations as a sports bettor, especially a recreational sports bettor, don't come around often. So I am just enjoying every bit of it. So if Lil wins, boom, that 65 to ticket cashes. If they do any worse than winning, I need to hope that PSG in their game, they're playing two separate games, I need to hope that PSG in their game do have the same result or worse. So if Lil draws, I need PSG to draw or lose. If Lil loses, I need PSG to lose. Here's what I did. I cashed out that 2-1, and here's why. Because of this $600 big bet bonus where I get the $300 free bet, I took Angers, who is the team that Lil's playing, and I took them plus 1.5 goals for that $600 wager, giving myself a possible middle of sorts in this game with the implied hedge. If Lil wins by one goal, I cash the futures ticket, I cash the 1.5, boom, I get both of them, and then I get that $300 bonus bet on top of it. If Lil loses, I get the hedge, I get the $300 bonus. If Lil draws, I get, depending on what happens with PSG, I at least get the bonus, possibly even the future ticket. cashing if that goes my way. And then in the worst case scenario, if Lil scores by or if win if Lil score wins by two or more, yeah, I don't win the hedge, but I still get the $300 bonus bet, and I got the $3,000 in the futures ticket. So it's going to be an exciting Sunday. I'm rooting for a Lil win by one goal, and I think it's very possible because Lil knows that they just have to score. Not to say they won't try to score more if they get up by one goal, but their objective won't be to score more. The objective will be to not concede. And being that they're a very great defensive team, I think there's a good chance that they win this game 1-0 or 2-1. And I can cash both tickets. So if you want to cheer along with me, join me. If everything I just said doesn't make any sense to you, I appreciate you following along just this long. Shout out to the first-time listeners. Shout out to the last-time listeners. I appreciate everybody being here. We're going to talk to Megan Kay, Meg in Manhattan. She's a member of the community. You've probably seen her in a bunch of Facebook groups. She's going to talk to us about her life as a gambler. Enjoy. Megan Manhattan.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing well. People may recognize your social media handle, Megan Manhattan. People may recognize your voice from a recent episode of You Can Bet on That. Where else should my people? I think that as far as I can tell, it's that's how people might recognize you. Where else might people recognize you?
I've been
you?
Told I'm fairly prolific in some of the Facebook groups.
Okay.
You can... Do for a Win likes to get on my case about posting in the wrong Facebook group and not theirs. I'm the famous Megan Kay who doesn't post in the right group. But yeah, I mean, big in everything, Atlantic City Facebook group, David Wong's Facebook group, Do for a Win Facebook group. And
that's
it's just
a
fun
lot of Facebook groups.
You know what? It kind of depends if it's a big, it's a busy work day, not much Facebook, but if not, or if I'm like getting ready to go to a trip and have some questions, I'm more on there. Or if people just post ridiculous things that I have to comment on.
I mean, that's the best part about this community, though, right? Is when you're starting to prepare for a trip, you can at the very least, like these groups or the or Twitter or whatever, like it can kind of help you get hyped. Like it's a really great way to sort of like ramp up to the trip.
Yeah, I haven't planned a big gambling trip in a while between just COVID and everything, but I'm in Atlantic City often, so there's always something new to do there.
Yeah. Well, let's before we get carried away, let's start this interview where we start all these interviews. Tell us about your first exposure to gambling as far back as you can think, the first time you remember seeing it.
My parents were, and my grandma were huge gamblers. So I've basically been raised to be the way I was. We would go to the horse track when I was young. We were always vacation in Wildwood, New Jersey. And once I was at somewhat of an appropriate age, like 5, they started tacking a couple of Atlantic City days onto the end of those trips. So it was like the late 80s, early 90s as a kid in Atlantic City, just always there. And Sunday nights, we would play blitz at family dinner, which I mean, some regions I've heard call it 31, but and we would play for like low stakes. It was normally like 8 or 10 people in the family. People would buy in like $3 or $5. And as a kid, they would humor me and let me play. Usually, I was usually the youngest, so I'd usually get a cut of whoever's winnings. But yeah, it was in my family. Everyone in my family gambled. So it was really normalized for me.
Okay. And it sounds like it seems like that for almost the entirety of your childhood, it sounds like.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, probably, I guess as early as 3, I remember like doing things like going to the track. There's stories that are told about me on the Atlantic City boardwalk with my older cousins with ice cream all over me because they were babysitting and didn't do a great job. Yeah. As long as I can remember, it's just been a very normal part of life.
Okay. So then as you're coming of age, do you patiently wait till you're of age to walk into a casino? Do you find a way to sneak in?
No. In Atlantic City, once I was maybe a little bit older, understood the games a little bit more, I would give my mom like $1 or $2 to go over to the big 6 wheel and put down a bet for me. And then also it's awesome. Like I grew up in Pittsburgh. So at that point in the, I guess it was the early 2000s, West Virginia's gambling age was 18. So then we finally started going legally. Me and my cousins, like when we turned 18, our family like took us all down for big family weekend. It was only slots at that time. So I was originally my parents were more slot players. So that was all I had true access to. But so I got those little bets in. But yeah, no, as soon as I turned 18, we were ready.
Interesting. So as you said, it's mostly slots there. But, you know, as we heard in your recent call, you can bet on that. You're obviously a tables game player. And so when did you start getting, when did that start becoming a part of your casino goings?
Probably in my early to mid 20s, something about blackjack appealed to me. So I started playing a little bit of blackjack. I'm sure I was really terrible at first. I didn't know about basic strategy, didn't understand basic strategy, but I was like, there's something cool about that because there's something cool about the numbers. And it appealed to me a little bit more than like hitting the button on the slots. I'll still throw some slots in every now and then, but blackjack. And then I saw the movie, like I had that light bulb moment that I think most people have at some point when they realize, oh, this is how I'm supposed to be playing. Before I think I even knew it was called basic strategy, I'm just like, oh, this is what it makes sense to hit. Like, it doesn't matter if I have a 15 or a 17, if I'm not going to beat the dealer. So like, right, not to be scared to take those hits. And I had that light bulb moment. I remember at Slots O Fun in Vegas playing $1 blackjack.
What a place to have an epiphany.
That was probably a more productive epiphany than a lot of people have at Slots O Fun, but I don't even know if it's still there. But then like, I actually started reading about basic strategy. And I remember then the movie 21 came out when I was graduated college, a couple years out of college. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. And I know that movie has a lot of inaccuracies, but I'm like, this is so cool. Like, this would be awesome to live my life like this.
Yeah. The aha moment of like, it's almost like this, like, this unlocking of information, right? When you learn about basic strategy and your stuff, like, oh my goodness. And then even in, you know, I don't actively count cards when I'm at a table, but it's fun to know that. It's fun to sometimes, like, at the beginning of a shoe, start counting. And then like, even if I'm not going to apply it, because I know that I'm not good enough to like really apply it to, it's kind of fun to feel like I have a deeper sense of what's happening than maybe other players at the table do. Right. Like, so blackjack really is this cerebral exercise in a way, the more you get into it.
And I wish I could truly count cards. Like, I know the theory, and sometimes, yeah, if the dealer is a slow dealer, I'll see how long I can keep a count for, but I've never applied myself enough to truly be able to count cards. I probably should, but I like drinking a little too much.
I was going to say, give me the free cocktails over the small house, that the small edge that I may or may not actually end up getting at any point, right? Or be able to put, I'll just take the drinks and, you know, so long as I can still, so long as I still feel like I have basic strategy down while I'm drinking, then I'm okay. There has been times where, I'll be a few in and realized, oh, that was a soft, like the soft hands will sometimes get me. And I'm like, oh wait, that was a double situation, not a stand, or vice versa. Like, oh, that wasn't one of the doubles. That was a stand. Be like, oh, that, done with the alcohol or time.
Well, I've had a little too much. If you see me like sitting there, like drawing the chart with my finger and like talking to myself, like the soft hands in particular, like you said, I'm like, okay, like they make the little stairs. Yeah. And okay, I can double on this one.
I like that. Make the little stairs. Everybody who's seen a basic strategy card knows exactly what you're talking about too. Yeah. What a lot of people don't know is you can have a basic strategy card at the table.
Yes. And it's awesome. And like blackjack, I'm pretty comfortable without the card. Spanish, I have a card that I still use because I'm just got into Spanish a couple of years ago. And that's just weirder basic strategy that I do not by any means have memorized.
Yeah. I have a card for craps. It just says bet the don't.
that's a whole other conversation.
It is. One we might get into. What, I mean, speaking of game, you see blackjack appeals to you. But like, what do you, tell us about the evolution of getting into table games. We've all gone through them. We all had that one game we started with. We all have that one game that attracts us now. But in between, we try this, we try that. We have moments of this. What was your sort of table game evolution journey like?
It was blackjack only for a really long time. And like every now and then, if I'm with a certain friend, tried to teach me three card poker. It was fun for like a session, but then I didn't retain it. Definitely have had my moments with craps. I still love craps, but it's been mean to me lately. So I've been hanging back from that a little bit more. Picked up a Spanish 21, dabble like every now and then, like some of the fun carnival games, like high card flush is fun. And then recently my, like I've really gotten into PyGal just in the past 3 months or so. And I've been cheating on blackjack a lot with PyGal lately. Like it's like, it challenges my brain more because blackjack has almost become like not a challenge. So PyGal, I'm actually like having to think about it. And I guess I kind of like that. I also love drink and push, as we say.
Yes.
It's a good night.
PyGal never doesn't sound like a good idea. That's what I've learned about PyGal. Even craps, this game that I absolutely love. By the way, finally threw dice across the tub for the first time in like 16 months a few weeks ago. Felt nice. Amazing. 0.7 out. Didn't matter. Felt great. but there's even moments where I'm like, my bankroll can't handle craps right now, or I'm not in the mood for blackjack. But if someone's like, "Wanna go play PyGal?" Yes. Yes, I do. It almost so long as there's enough cash in my pocket to play a few hands, I'm almost always down to play PyGal.
And I'm getting more into it. Like it was a friend that got me to the table for a first time and I was drunk. So I didn't know what I was doing at all. And didn't do very well that first. It's like, I knew, okay, like the basic, you get 7 cards, you make 2 hands, 5 and 2. And I knew that, okay, I'm supposed to be able to push at this a lot. And that didn't happen that night. But then like I started playing it a little bit more with a clearer head. And once it really got fun for me, I got my boyfriend into it. We taught his mom PyGal over Mother's Day. She really liked it. She picked it up fast. I was impressed. So I'm getting more and more friends into PyGal. So it's going to be more of like the social gaming repertoire now.
Have you played both versions, face up?
I have.
Okay. Do you have a preference?
I don't know if I can say I have a preference. It was intimidating to play face down for me for a while because I learned on face up.
Okay.
And I was really nervous the first time, like I was at the Golden Nugget in Atlantic City, and they only had face down. And I'm like, it's now or never. And so I was able to go. And the thing that confused me the most is I remembered that the house takes their cut, but I wasn't ready for that. So they're like, oh, you need $1.25. And I'm like, oh yeah, I can change if you need some more in the rack. And I'm like, they're like, no, we need $1.25 for our commission. And I was like, oh yeah. But I think even of that, I seem to do better at face down. So maybe I like face down better, but I don't know. I really like them both. And I think that nowadays it seems like they're 50-50 with what tables I find out there.
Yeah. I had a similar, even though face up, I think is like a 1% better for that, for the player on the house edge. I don't ask me why. I don't remember what the nuance is that makes that, but it is slightly better for the player. But I haven't had a winning session at a face up table yet. And so like, I'm like, well, I'd rather even like, you know, irrationally, I'm like, well, I don't want to play face up. I never win face up, even though it's the better game. You mentioned high flush? Is that what it's called? High card flush. Yes. When we were in Biloxi one time, we couldn't find a table at any game we wanted to play. And I was so desperate to like sit down and like play a game.
Mm-hmm.
I almost sat down at a high card flush table. Bogan, who was with me, would not let us play. He was not interested in high card flush. So I am yet to play high card flush, but it sounds like a simple, fun carnival game.
It is a simple, fun carnival game. I mean, there's one minor choice you get to make if you want to like raise your bet or if you just want to fold your cards. And I mean, but for the most part, it's just fun because you can't affect the other players. So that's good for somebody who's maybe intimidated by something like blackjack. I've made more money on the side bets on high card flush than the actual thing. And I'm not much of a side bet player, but it's one of those games you kind of got to play the side bet. So you can walk by a table and see $5 minimum, but you're probably going to end up playing $20 a hand.
Right. Yeah. That's where they get you. Right. Yeah. Do you bet on sports at all?
Definitely bet on sports. I miss football season because I'm way better at football than any other sport, but I've been donating some money to DraftKings on hockey and basketball lately without too much success.
Okay. Do you go on your gut? Do you follow anybody? How do you bet hockey?
I mostly go on my gut and kind of like what my recent memories are of if I do watch a game. My boyfriend does a little bit more research. So sometimes he'll say like, oh, these are the picks for today. And then I'll normally tweak them a little bit because for some reason, I don't want to go on just what the experts say.
Yeah.
And sometimes he gets mad at me when I tweak, because usually I tweak to make them more conservative, because I'd rather do like a 5-leg parlay of minus 200 legs than a 3-leg of minus 110 legs. But it's okay. All fun.
Yeah. It's all fun.
Yeah. I know I'm not going to like hit these crazy parlays, but if I can like put a $10 parlay out there, gives me some entertainment for the evening as I'm following the games.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
Yeah. That is what it's about. Sports betting very much can bring entertainment to our lives.
Mm-hmm.
What table? It sounds like maybe Pi Gal is the answer to this. If you went to the casino right now and there's a seat at every possible game, are you finding yourself at the Pi Gal table?
Probably. Especially if I'm trying to play for a while and I'm trying to have some drinks or just keep myself in for a while being rated, especially if there's like a multiplier day or something that I want to make sure I get my time in, that I don't bust my bankroll super fast. It's probably Pi Gal. That's where my head is right now. And I feel like I'm cheating on blackjack with Pi Gal, because blackjack will always be like the game I can go back to.
Yeah.
But Pi Gal is what makes me excited right now. Like, that's what I'm like, oh, I want to get out there and play some Pi Gal this weekend, hold some cards.
Yes. I mean, that's one of the beauties about Pi Gal, right? Is you get to hold mm-hmm. the cards. You got to find a pitch game a pitch game of blackjack or a squeeze game of Bach to be able to do that.
Over my head, but Golden Nugget in Atlantic City has the only pitch game still in Atlantic City, but it's only open like Friday and Saturday nights. It's a $25 table, which is, it's within my bankroll as long as I'm doing okay. But I do love that table, even though it's 6 to 5, I will suck it up just to play some single deck.
Yes. It is interesting how they have now spun single deck into worse rules, because people have put it in their heads that the single, either they want to play with the cards, or people think that single deck's better than multi-deck regardless of rules. And so casinos have gotten away with going to 6 to 5. We've saw that in Biloxi too, where the pitch games were 6 to 5. What brings you to a casino, right? It sounds like you go in for offers and multipliers. I mean, you're close enough to where it seems like you could make a night of it, make a weekend of it, go in for a couple hours. So when casinos are so accessible to you like that, like, what brings you in there?
A little bit of everything. I mean, we definitely like to go and have fun at the casinos. It's rarely a strictly gambling trip, I'm about 50 minutes from Atlantic City. So we can make it down there for a weeknight dinner and a little bit of gambling if we want, or we're there for the weekend just about every other weekend. But we're definitely stacking it with if we know some friends are going to be in town. Back in the day, if we used to be able to go see a show or a concert, back when those were things that were allowed. The trip is definitely going to be stacked between some gambling and some hanging out with friends. Maybe if we know someone's going to have like a suite that has like, it's going to have a suite party, definitely going to do some more pool action in the summer. That's huge for me. Love pool all day, gamble all night. That's a good time.
That is a good time.
Not much of a beach person. I like a nice hotel pool at the casino.
Okay. So where are your casinos of choice in AC? Where do you enjoy being the most?
Probably hanging out. If I'm just having fun, Hard Rock. That's where a lot of our friends play. That's where there's like a vibrant scene, good music, good shows and concerts when it starts up. For me, gambling is probably the Golden Nugget. That's where they're kind of giving me the best offers. I love their pool in the summer. I love their marina, if they're on boats or the jet skis and just like hanging out outside. And then we'll spread around too. And there's really all the Atlantic City casinos I kind of play at. I'm really itching to get back out to Vegas. I miss Vegas. And when I go back and visit my parents, the Pittsburgh area casinos, I love the Meadows with the racetrack and the casino. It's just good hometown fun.
You are
in the rivers downtown Pittsburgh.
Yeah. You are the third person that has referenced Pittsburgh area casinos with a preference to the Meadows casino. So that's, I'm considering a little trip to the Pittsburgh area, here soon. And I keep on. And so at first I was like, oh, I'll just hang it. But now I'm convinced I need to go out to Meadows while I'm there.
Yeah. Go out to Meadows. It's a little bit more, well, actually Pennsylvania rules in general are great for gamblers, but Meadows, I feel like, is a little bit more gambler friendly. It's still a pretty fun vibe, but it's not just like people going crazy. And the weird thing is the Rivers in downtown Pittsburgh does not serve free drinks on the casino floor, and the Meadows does.
And interesting.
And at
I
first I thought it was
Pittsburgh
like a
thing.
Maybe, but it doesn't seem. At first I thought maybe it was like a state rule because there was a period where the Meadows didn't either. But then they started it as like a this month promotion, and they kept it. And so it kind of makes a difference to me. I mean, drinks aren't super expensive on the casino floor. I think I paid $5 for a whiskey Coke at the Rivers, but it's something.
It is something. It is. It is tricky, right? Trying to balance the value of those free drinks, right? Because you get to some casinos and you're like, I've been through three free drinks and I think I would have rather just paid for paid for one, right? Because they're either watered down, they're not made correctly or something like that. But I mean, if you find a spot that has like solid drink service, the drinks are made well, they're of value. Yeah, it matters. Like it is a benefit to have a handful of drinks over a longer session delivered to you that are what they are for free drinks. But, I mean, I get some drinks where it's like that just wasn't made well, you know? And then when you're waiting 25, 30 minutes in between well-made drinks. Yeah. It's like, I wish I would have gone to the bar and just paid $10 for an expensive cocktail.
Well, yeah. You're like, I'm going to hang out until the waitress comes so I can get my free drink. But then how much does that free drink end up costing you? Especially if drink service isn't good. If drink service is good, I kind of don't care how bad the drink is, because if I'm drinking on the casino floor, I'm probably going to be drinking like a whiskey Coke or a vodka soda.
Sure.
Because also, it's very frustrating for me as a female that they don't serve White Claws on the casino floor or any rosés. They're always like, we have white Zinfandel. And I'm like, no, that is not the same as rosé. So that's frustrating. Casinos need to kind of get with the times for like, especially if they want female millennials, you need to serve White Claw and rosé.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
It sounds like I appreciate you bringing this to my attention. I wouldn't have known.
Guys don't understand.
Yeah.
You guys have your beer, you have your whiskey, you're good.
I will say something that blew my mind. I think I tried ordering a Red Bull somewhere where drinks were free. Mm-hmm. I want to say it was in Biloxi. I think I tried ordering a Red Bull and she said now it's going to cost you $3. And by principle, I said no. I mean, what's $3 is how much I was going to, you know, tip her for the free drink, right? I mean, I was like, really? Is Red Bull really costing your bottom line so much that you can't bring it? And it's always when you're waiting for your free drink. It's always when you're like, oh, but I'm going to stick around for my free drink, that you're playing blackjack and just go like on a 10 hand loss run too. You're like, I don't know if I'm going to have enough money to be here for my drink.
Yeah, and I have seen that with Red Bull. I've seen Atlantic City is probably roughly half and half whether they'll give you Red Bull on the floor. Because I do love a good Red Bull vodka too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or sometimes like, I think, I forget what casino, there's one of casinos that will give you a Red Bull, but only if you have one of the higher cards.
Yes.
You get the nice Fiji water too, if you have like a higher card a lot of times.
Oh, it's so fancy, that Fiji water.
It's like, I don't actually care, but if I can have that Fiji, I'm going to be bougie and order the Fiji.
Sure. Another reason to always peek your head into the high roller or the high limits room to see what the minimums are there. Chances are, like we saw, that guy saw in Foxwoods, there you could find a $25 pie gal table in the high limit room and be drinking their, you know, the stuff that they won't just serve you on the casino floor.
Yeah.
Vegas. I mean, you miss Vegas. Oh, yeah. When you're back there, what are you excited to start to do first, or just to do it all? Like, what are a few things that are definitely happening on that first trip back to Vegas?
First thing that comes to mind is brunch at Mon Ami Gabi at Paris, the outdoor restaurant that's right on the strip. and you can watch the fountains because it's surprisingly reasonably priced for how much they could charge just for that location. And the food is good. So it's perfect for like a brunch or a lunch and just people watch and watch the fountains. Like that's probably one thing I was just thinking like, oh, I really want to go there. Definitely the pool scene. I have also haven't been downtown in such a long time. So I really want to go downtown and see all the new places that they've been building there. Like I haven't even seen the first wave. Like I've never even been to the D. It's been that long since I've been downtown Vegas.
Wow. That's a long time.
I have some catching up to do.
Yeah. Okay. What's, you know, as someone, I mean, you know, with Atlantic City, so close to you, sports betting becoming legalized, New Jersey, probably the best state in the union when it comes to sports betting.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever find has there ever been a point, especially in the past few years since sports betting got legalized, where you thought maybe like where Vegas almost lost its appeal a little bit because a lot of what was available there is near you? Or is it the things like the brunches across from the fountains, the pool scene, stuff like that, that keeps Vegas calling your name?
That definitely keeps Vegas calling my name still. And up until recently, I was living in New York City. And so I could get down to Atlantic City, but it was a little bit more of a to-do. I still did it on the Greyhound bus, but that was when it was like worth planning a trip to Vegas. And like, also, I think just it's easier to get a group of friends together to go to Vegas than to go to Atlantic City, especially girls. Mm. Like if you say girls trip Vegas, all the girls are going to be like, yes. If you say girls trip Atlantic City, they're going to be like, maybe, yeah, I guess. So Vegas still has that overall appeal of, yeah, like there is nightlife in Atlantic City, but there's really nightlife in Vegas. And there's so many better shows in Vegas. So it's still, if I'm going to go to Vegas, yeah, I'm going to gamble, but it's probably going to take a little bit of a backseat to everything else that Vegas has to offer because I can gamble here. I can bet on sports here. I can bet on sport even when I'm moving from New York to New Jersey and being able to bet on sports anytime I want to was so huge. So I have all that. So Vegas is going to be more of a vacation than a strictly gambling trip for me.
How long is that Greyhound bus ride from the city to Atlantic City?
It can be 2 hours and 15 minutes, or it can be 3.5 hours.
Wow.
And it just depends on traffic and like if it decides to break down because I would be Greyhound and I would take the New Jersey Transit when I felt like I just could not put up with Greyhound anymore. And that one made a couple more stops. It was always worth it though. It was either like that or not go and not gamble because I mean, I lived close to the Resorts World in Queens and never even went because I'm like,
Oh, I love gamblers. I mean, it was either that or not go. And yeah. I wasn't going to not go.
Yeah, I wasn't going to not go. So I'll sit on a bus with weird, dirty strangers. Like, cause I had to, I mean, I was living city life, no car. So it's not that it was so long, but people are like, how do you do that? There's things we put up with for casino trips.
Yes.
That was one of them.
There's things we do, mm-hmm. Things we put up with for casino trips. So what, you know, you mentioned you'll go into a casino to let you plan around offers, stuff like that. What kind of offers bring you in? Like what is a casino in Atlantic City got to send you for you to decide to go in specifically to take advantage of an offer? What brings you in?
I love a good multiplier day, whether it's depending on what casino and what I need and what I can't tier match to at that casino. I love like Golden Nugget. They usually most Sundays they have like tier point multipliers. I will go and play Golden Nugget on a Sunday for that. But maybe there's another place that I know I can just stay on the tier match merry-go-round for, and they have a great comp dollar multiplier. I'm maybe going to go and play for that comp dollar multiplier. And there's certain gifts, but it has to be, I used to be have to get every toaster that they offered me, but now it has to be a gift that's actually a little bit more worth my while to go on record and put in a decent day of play. So like a nice gift card, like if you offered me a $50 Amazon gift card, that might entice me enough to go down, especially if I'm going to go down anyway. That might make me choose one casino over another for the day. But I need to stop chasing every toaster and every duffel bag because I had when I moved out of my New York City apartment, there was this stack of casino gifts that I'm like, what am I going to do with this shit? Like, it was still in the box. I don't need it. And like, I moved in with my boyfriend in New Jersey and he is also a gambler. We had identical toasters and identical food processors that we had gotten. So I learned not to go for every dumb thing. Or even if you're in town, like I used to have to bounce from casino to casino, depending on if I could get every single gift I possibly could. Like it just got to be not worth the time and effort and not worth the ding on your ADT certain places for picking up a gift and not playing very much. So I am a little bit more selective. Hey, sometimes if I can get a free room one place, but not another place, I'm going to pick the place that's giving me the free room. And that's, even though I do live close for a weekend, if I want to be drinking, that's a priority for me too. Or a good lounge. A good lounge will also make me choose one place or another.
So when you and your boyfriend had these identical appliances, was this like before you realized that you guys were both gamblers, or had you known this about him? Like in my head, I picture you like moving in and being like, wait, and like you have this like moment of realization, like, oh wait, you got that at that casino too.
No, we actually, I'm such a degenerate. We met in Atlantic City.
That's wonderful.
Off the bat, we knew we had that in common. And I have realized from past relationships how important that is. Like not that you both have to be gamblers, but the non-gambler would at least have to understand the gambler's life. But I love the fact that we both want to do the same things. We want to go and gamble and have some cocktails. And would it inevitably, if we were making the round, getting the gifts, would pick up the same toaster. I mean, that was before we were living together. And maybe we thought we both needed the toaster. The only identical thing we kept was a knife set, because you can never, if you're cooking, you can never have like too many knives, and like a couple duffel bags. We have like matching sets, and thank goodness we never used them at the same time, because that would be very cheesy.
I still have bags where the same thing, got them as a casino gift, and I refuse to get rid of them. I also don't know when I'll ever use them. Give me one thing that you've gotten as a casino gift that after you got it, whether you lost a bunch or didn't, we're just like, I didn't really need this.
Gosh, that's a good question.
Because I'm trying to think, and I asked this question, it's almost unfair for me to ask this question because I'm having a hard time now that I think about what my example would be. I think it might have been one of the duffel bags. There was one duffel bag that was really actually kind of cool, where like it could shrink down like really, or it could really open up.
Oh, I think I have that same one. It's probably the casino supply house. Just the same duffel bag to every casino.
Exactly. But there was one bag where I didn't lose a bunch, but like for some reason it took me a long time to get to hit that credit amount to get there. And I got it. And I think my disappointment was like, I could have done a lot more with my day. Try to get this back.
I'm remembering there was one day, it was a player's choice day. So it was like all the leftovers that they had from the past couple months. And I get there and I'm excited to go like pick out my gift. And I'm like, I don't want anything here. And I got some like dumb ceramic baking dish that I couldn't even think of what I would bake in it. And I tried to give it to my mom and she's like, I don't need this either. And so I think that might've ended up at Goodwill or something. So that's one. I've never gotten anything completely ridiculous. I got this one. It was like a pressurized wine opener or something that seemed very cool at the time and then broke the first time I ever tried to use it. So
casino stuff surprisingly has stayed intact for me. I'm yet to have the poor quality casino gift that just like breaks on use. You don't have to dig into your personal life here if you don't want to, but I am curious if you can give this example from a previous relationship where them not being a gambler kind of became a sticking point in the relationship.
It was on a Vegas trip and he was all about going to Vegas and it seemed like it would be a fun thing. And I knew he wasn't a big gambler, but he's like, yeah, I like to play some video poker. But then every time I would want to gamble, it was like sad. Oh, you're not paying attention to me. When do you guys do that? And like just waiting for it to be over. Or afterwards, I'd play for blackjack for like an hour and a half and I was ignoring him all day. Like that was the narrative that started. So I'm like, this probably isn't going to work.
That's probably
isn't going to work. Vegas-y things, but I'm like, if I, you do understand the free room we are staying in is because I am playing blackjack, and that did not. And the reason we got to skip the line is because I had a Total Rewards Platinum card at that time. I've since upgraded to Diamond and got fancier. But when he was like, oh, this check-in line's huge. I'm like, I got this. I'm like, but you do realize all these things are because of the gambling.
Right.
But no, I'm just like, it's never going to work because he couldn't just do his thing for a couple hours while I did my thing for a couple hours.
Yeah. I definitely have, I think anybody listening has had an experience like that where they go along. You don't really pick up on the red flags of maybe they're not going to like this until you actually sit down at the table, whether it's somebody you're in a relationship with or just someone who's tagging along to the casino. Right. Like I've had the latter has happened plenty of times. Like, oh yeah, I'll go to the casino with you. And then like, all they do is sit there and watch you play. And it's like, you gonna go do something else, or?
And I'm also like, do you not like the free drinks? Who doesn't like free drinks? Like, who doesn't like seeing, if you're in a casino that maybe has a live, like even not even a concert, but just a live band playing on the floor? Like, there's cool things. Like, it's, unless you're like so against that lifestyle, you shouldn't be bored.
Right. Yeah. At the top of the interview, you mentioned Facebook groups and how you're active in them. I'm only active in the Vice Lounge online Facebook group. I guess I'm in the Travel Zork one as well. I don't know which ones
I'm in that one.
Yeah. I know a lot of people in the community are in these Facebook groups. People are active at some level or not. What benefit do you see here? What do you get from this? How has it enhanced your gambling or just your casino trips? Tell me about what keeps you going back to these Facebook groups and what you're getting out of them.
Definitely, I've met a ton of friends from the Facebook group. So, I mean, that's huge for me. I've met some really amazing friends who you have that friendly banter in the Facebook groups. And then maybe you're like, oh, we're both in town. Let's have a cocktail. And I've met some really good friends that way. Or sometimes they've had meetups that you can just mingle and meet people. But on a day-to-day basis, it's good to know, like, especially in COVID times, oh, this restaurant is opening back up, or restaurant recommendations in general. I had a great experience at this restaurant. I had a terrible experience at this restaurant. And to some extent, I take that with a grain of salt, depending on the intelligence of the poster. And like every terrible Yelp review, there's going to be like terrible posts where you can tell the person is just whiny or lost money, so it's going to hate everything about their trip.
Yeah.
But I think having that forum to be able to get real-time feedback from, not feedback, but like real-time information from people to say, hey, how late is this place open? Like, if it's not something that's Googleable, like a lounge or something. And sometimes you have some actual really good advice, like the Travel Zork, and we're going to get like super intelligent advice and tips in that. And sometimes it's entertainment value. Sometimes you got to see the things that people are posting and they are just a hot mess. Or sometimes I'm here for the comments. If there's a good argument going on in the comments, I'm just grabbing my popcorn and just reading and laughing at people. But it's a little bit of a guilty pleasure. I mean, you can take it seriously. You can learn a lot, but you can't take it too seriously.
Right.
And sometimes, I mean, I also like posting pictures about my experience. And sometimes it feels good for people to say that they enjoy something you posted or they got a good tip from something you posted. So the sense of community like that, it can be fun and it can be gratifying.
It's interesting. You mentioned the Yelp reviews, and who knows, maybe with someone who just lost a bunch of money and then also then did like their experience here or there. It makes me wonder like how many Yelp reviews or reviews anywhere in Vegas are given through the filter or lens of a gambler who just lost and is looking for some sort of good experience to lighten their mood. And so they're being delivered a normal experience, but because it's not like this like heightened experience that they need to like lift them out of their mood, they are viewing it as a negative experience.
Also, my favorite thing is people will complain about certain food in certain VIP lounges. And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry you didn't enjoy your free meal.
Word. Yes. Do you have a favorite lounge?
I mean, when I have the generosity of a friend that can take me, the Plum Lounge in Hard Rock Atlantic City is pretty awesome, that I can get into on my own accord. Amphora Borgata is that for dinner. Legends Lounge at Hard Rock for brunch. Those are probably the two best.
Okay. Very good. You mentioned when you go to Vegas, gambling kind of takes a backseat. You list a number of the things that you like to do while you're there. When it comes to like casino amenities, is there anything that you look for in a casino hotel to stay there? Assuming you're getting equal value sort of for your dollar, what's the type of things that the casino can offer that's going to, that, you know, brings you there, that makes you more interested in staying there?
In Vegas, location would be huge for me. I want a place that's walkable. I've never, once I stayed off strip because that was work that put me up at the Hard Rock, but I really want to be on strip and want to be kind of close to center strip because I want to be able to walk to different properties and have that ease. A Vegas strip, I'm probably going to look for somewhere with a nice pool to get that kind of daytime experience that we only get a few months in New Jersey. You can get many, many more months in Vegas. Vibe on the casino floor, especially because where I'm staying is probably where I should be putting in a decent amount of play. And if you don't want to play there, it's going to seem like a chore to play there just to get in whatever number of hours a day you feel is appropriate to, not so much to justify why you're there in the first place, but if you want to continue to get those offers in the future. So those are probably the big, and I mean, I don't need a super nice room. Yeah, I don't want a dirty room, but I don't need like a super nice room. I don't need a suite. So that's not huge on my list of priorities, as long as I know the room isn't going to be shabby or dirty.
Yeah. Work sending you to the Hard Rock.
Yeah, it was awful.
Was it for the AVN Awards?
No, I'm kidding. No, it was for CES.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. we still hiked to the convention center, but right. Yeah, we were staying at Hard Rock. And then next year we stayed at the Bellagio, and I liked that better. Although Hard Rock rooms were really nice. I was very impressed with their rooms. I hope they still look like that now that it's Virgin Hotel.
Yeah. Initial response from the community has been, I don't know what anybody has said about the quality, but it sounds like Virgin is dead. Like that casino is just dead. Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's confusing though, the way it's the Virgin Hotel, but the Mohegan Sun Casino. And I've heard people say, I'm going to Virgin. I've heard people actually say, I'm going to Mohegan Sun. And that's going to hurt them in the long run if they don't have that strong identity. Yeah. And just like if I was paying, I'm not going to pay to stay off strip unless it's some crazy amazing deal.
I'm with you. I mean, I just can't. I think it's great that places like Palms and, you know, and Hard Rock and, you know, that they've found a way to stay afloat and to, they have their customer base. And, but like, who's going to Vegas for a second time? I can see going for a first time, seeing the deal at Hard Rock, seeing like, oh, yeah. I heard like, you know, it's not obvious on Hard Rock anymore, but in the past people seem like, oh, Hard Rock, that's got to be a cool hotel, let's stay there. It's not far from the strip. But if like, if you're going to Vegas on a regular basis, why would you want to anchor yourself off strip? It just doesn't, I don't see the value in it. And I don't think any of the off strip, Green Valley Ranch and all that, all those places notwithstanding, those are very much like local.
That's
very different experience. But these casinos that are blocks away from the strip, is it worth it? Right? Like, is it worth anchoring yourself off of the strip? Because I don't think any of those casinos, Palms, Rio, Hard Rock, I don't think any of them are cool enough with enough going on for me to want to spend most of my time in Vegas at that place.
Yeah, for me, no. And I mean, back in, I guess like when Palms and Hard Rock first opened, and I guess that was the early 2000s, like right around the year 2000 or so, when they were the hot spots in town. So maybe I could understand that if you were going for a party trip with your friends and you were going to Moon at Palms and like, or yeah, whatever, like those nightclubs. And I mean, cause I remember watching like the first Real World Vegas when they were at the Palms, and they just made the Palms look like the coolest place.
That is
and
true.
Hard Rock was known for their crazy pool scene. There was like the Rehab reality show about the Hard Rock pool. Like that glorified those places. So I can see if you wanted a party trip, it would make sense to stay at those places, but that's
fair.
15, 20 years ago now.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm definitely not, those scenes aren't for me anymore. I can't hang in those scenes.
They were at one point in my life, and part of me really still wants them to be, but I'm in my mid 30s now. So I'm just going to be that old person at the club. And that's not a good feeling.
No, the last time I was in a club, I think it was in, what's the big mega club that's in Caesars, starts with an O, Omnia, I think.
Omnia. I was at that before it was Omnia, when it was Pure.
Pure. Yes. I walked into that spot with my buddy, and because he was trying to find some girl that he was chasing. It was my bachelor party, so I wasn't chasing any girls, but I was just there to gamble and hang out with my friends. So he was trying to find his girl. I was all about it. And so we go in there, and the place is just flooded with people. And I was like, I know if I was 10 years younger, I would tell myself that this is cool. But as a 30 something, I'm like looking around of, how is this fun for anybody? How is this a good time?
I want it to be fun because I love to dance and I like that type of music. But
yes,
when it's, and now it's gotten to the point of clubs where there's barely even a dance floor. It's just all, if you have a bottle and you have a table. But I there's a couple places, but I would love there to be more places that was like Omnia turned down 20-30% for people over 30. And boogie nights at Hard Rock, and I mean, boogie nights at Tropicana in Atlantic City is kind of like that. I mean, even though it's a little bit older music, like it was I've only been there once, but it was so much fun. And I can't wait for that to reopen because that is, I think I have to admit to myself that that is more my scene now that I'm in my mid 30s.
Yeah. We went to the Bank. That place kind of did it for us. It was kind of like you. Yeah, it was quieter, right? It's not what it was 10 years ago, right? But we were there. It was full enough where we didn't feel like it was empty.
Mm-hmm.
And the music definitely was, you could tell it was for people who grew up in the 90s and the early 2000s, right?
With give me all of that to dance to.
Yes. So I enjoyed the Bank, I think I was 30, 31 at the time, was a good spot for someone who isn't ready who cannot handle the mega clubs anymore.
And I think Bank has closed. I'm not sure though.
Has it closed?
I think.
That makes sense. I mean, I don't know if I've, let's look. Permanently closed. Yeah.
That's a shame.
That is a shame.
Because it sounds, based on what you just said, it sounds like a place I'd want to go to.
Yeah. Well, there we go. That was my one nightlife recommendation. It's gone. So now all I can recommend is the nearest crap stable.
Which I'm sure there are plenty close enough to Bank and Bellagio.
Yes. Let me tell you, I kind of wish Craps were, I think Planet Hollywood has the best scene for this, but I wish Craps tables were more included in the party pit atmosphere, right? It always, and obviously with the way they have to set up the pit and everything, it makes more sense to have the smaller table games, but it would be nice for a craps table to be a little closer to that party pit atmosphere, a little more included in that, to kind of feel like you're getting that nightlife vibe while also gambling.
I like that. The only problem would be terrible craps etiquette and buying in middle rolls and buying in for only $20. That could get messy, but
that's fair.
Yeah, I wish it for like the music and the lights and the vibe. That'd be super fun.
Just a couple more questions in your gambling life here. Do you have a drink or something that you like get at the casino that you almost never get otherwise? Like, I noticed that some gamblers have this. I'm curious if you do.
Yeah, not often, but sometimes I get peer pressured into drinking Long Island iced teas.
Nice.
And they're usually disgusting and I regret it the like 10 minutes after I have it, but either people order them for the group without asking if I'm okay with it, or you're like, people order it. And then like, you're like the third person and you're like, yeah, I'll just have what they're having.
Right.
And it's never a good decision.
You know who loves a good Long Island iced tea?
Who?
Mark Duvall.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to see that sometime.
When I say love one, I think that's what he goes to. Like, that's just what he ends up ordering. But yes, the person I think I've most recently see order a Long Island is Mark Duvall.
Wow. I can respect that. I just, my body can't handle them anymore.
Yeah. What are the podcasts? Obviously, you know, The Better Life, you can bet on that. What other podcasts can someone find on your phone?
Definitely Do for a Win. I really like, it's in the gambling sphere, but one of the lesser people I hear talk about less. I love Two Morons Talking About Casino and Stuff. Have you listened to that one?
Yes. It unfortunately, especially when the pandemic hit, I just did not have the same amount of time as I used to listen to podcasts. And so same. It was one of the podcasts that I just sort of listened to far less than the rest of them. But yes, when I was in a heavy podcast rotation, they were one of my favorites.
Yeah, no, that goes to the top of my list if an episode comes out. Of course, 500. Non-gambling, I actually like, a little bit of a guilty pleasure. Sometimes I listen to Snooki's podcast because she's just hilarious.
Is she really?
A couple other, yeah. Oh yeah. It's good. So fun.
Good for her.
A couple of reality TV show podcasts, a couple of The Betches podcasts, a little bit of everything. I need to start. That's at least 60% of my podcasts are gambling podcasts though, because you just can't get that content anywhere else. So a lot of times.
No, and for some, and somehow it kind of fills that void in between gambling trips.
Yeah,
there's something about. I've noticed this with almost any with any topic with anything that I enjoy. There's no content that sort of scratches an itch for me when I'm not able to do something I want to do, like listening to a Vegas or a casino or a gambling themed podcast when I'm, you know, in between trips or on my way to it. I mean, how great is it when you're on that flight to Vegas and you got you got an episode of 500, Vito puts out an episode, right?
Vito, yes, I love Vito.
You get you get ready to go to your trip. You have the discipline to not listen to him right away to save him. And like your whole plane right there is nothing but Vegas and gambling themed podcasts. You're just writing down everything you want to do. I can't wait to go back to Vegas.
Yeah, and I also have a gambling playlist a Vegas playlist that also is like on the plane. You would get me hyped up. It's been a while. There's been new additions to the playlist, but yeah, there's certain things that get you excited. And beforehand, watching Vegas movies, of course.
What is the Vegas movie?
I mean, 21's up there, but I mean, The Hangover also, and Vegas Vacation.
Yes, Vegas Vacation.
Those are the ones that immediately come to mind for me.
By the time people hear this episode, they'll know. But Mark Duvall and I just recorded yesterday. Our next episode, Vegas Vacation, is going to be one of the focuses in the Better Viewing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that.
Yes.
For sure.
It's going to be fun. Megan, this was so much fun. Thank you so much for joining me. Yeah.
You have to let me know now that you've broken the casino seal. You got to get out to Atlantic City sometime.
The next time I'm in Atlantic City, I hope that you and I get an opportunity to throw small cubed items across a tub and win a lot of money.
Absolutely. Hopefully the win a lot of money part also.
At Megan in Manhattan. Is it
in Manhattan.
Yes. At Meg in Manhattan. It throws me off. It's a very clever name, but the Meg in Manhattan also sounds like Megan. And I always find myself confusing. So I apologize for butchering both your name and your Twitter handle. Meg in Manhattan. Thank you so much for joining me. And I look forward to throwing dice with you sometime.
Absolutely. This was fun.
Big shout out to Meg for joining me. She's Meg in Manhattan on her social medias. Check her out, follow her. You'll see her as Megan K in those Facebook groups. You probably noticed if you're on, I think I shared this on all my social medias. We got bonus episodes floating in the Patreon. They're little short 3 to 5-ish, 5 or 6 minute episodes of just sort of one topic, quick monologues. One of those, and I realized that as I put that up, you're like, what is it, Tim? Before we wander over to patreon.com/abetterlife and give you our support, what do those episodes sound like? So I figured, hey, why not give the people a little bit of taste? So here's an episode that dropped on Wednesday for my Patreon followers on the benefits of having a routine at the craps table. May 19th,
third day in a row. Feeling good about this streak. Hope everybody's doing well. Hopefully your bets are cashing. Want to talk today about having a routine at the craps table and how that can really be to your benefit. There's two or three really big reasons why having a routine to what you do at a craps table is a benefit not only for yourself, but for the dealers and for the table as a whole. The first one is because the dealers will remember your routine and will often point out if you are missing something, right? And that's huge, right? That's if they know you like to have a hard eight, they'll let you know, hey, you're not on the hard eight. If they know you like a combat, now this is something that I benefit from when I'm on the pass line. I don't have a continuous combat. I usually get 3 points up and then I wait for something to cash. Well, you know, if I'm in my routine, a dealer will pay out one of my cum bets that's on a number and then just drop my bet in the cum and give me the rest. That's huge. That's one less step that I have to worry about. And I like knowing that they're picking up on what my routine is and know to look for those. It's even benefited me in not having a bet on the table and being given the benefit of the doubt. I've told this story before. I was at Maryland Live. I was playing a continuous don't come bet. They got the dice out super quick between rolls one time, and I couldn't get my action on a DC. I had the chips in my hand, and the box man sees it, and he's like, go, and the roll came a two. And he said, go ahead and pay that man $15. So I did not have money even in the box. I didn't even announce it until I think the roll was going across. I was like, oh, I didn't get a chance to make my DC bet. Box man sees it, sees me holding the chips, knows that that's what I was doing. He's like, go ahead and pay that man $15. It helps in the flow of the game. When you have a lot of things going on, it can really help in the flow of the game, which really matters to people when the table starts getting hot. As the table starts heating up, a lot of players, especially superstitious players, want to see sort of a just natural flow to the game. They think too much disruption, too much lagging, of course, is going to, and it just makes it more enjoyable for everybody. And you're making it a lot easier on the dealers. There's going to be less mistakes. There's going to be less confusion. If the dealers know how to anticipate everybody's action, it's easy for them to get through their routine. They're going to appreciate that more. And the more appreciative they are of what you're doing, the more they're going to be looking out for you. So this nice little cycle of you're benefiting, they're benefiting, and it just sort of turns into a cycle. Now, one thing that's really important about this is get your bets in the right place. So this is something that, it depends on the dealers and their preferences, but there's a couple really hard and fast rules about where and how you place your bets that sort of exist at every craps table. One, never put chips anywhere in the box numbers or behind that, like where the dealers have their chips. Never place chips in that space. Even if you're just giving the chips to the dealer to do something, even if you announce what the chips are for, never do that. Always put your chips in the cum area and state what you want them for, or toss them in the middle if you're trying to make a hard wager or middle bet somewhere. Otherwise, a lot of dealers will expect the rest of it to sort of be self-serve. The field, the pass line, the DC, a cum bet. They expect you to make all of those bets sort of yourself. Knowing this is pretty huge because you can really irritate a dealer and sometimes even disrupt play if chips aren't what they're supposed to be. I have seen players toss chips like on the 4 or 5, make their announcement that's going. The dealer doesn't hear them. So the dealer turns back around, and as the dice are being sent out to the shooter, there's random chips sitting on the 4, and he's like, what the fuck are these? Why are these here? And so it can really disrupt play. So get your bets in the right place. Sort of figure out quickly how a dealer likes their bets, like where they like them placed, stuff like that. And then, try to stick to a routine. It can only work for you. Of course, we all get like a wild hair and decide we're going to toss out, a chip for, you know, to hop the nines or to make a hard way bet or whatever. That's fine. Keep your usual bets in a routine. It's only going to mean that the dealers are also looking out for you. And this is especially helpful if you've been taking advantage of the free drinks and you forget to place odds or something like that. A good chance the dealer's going to point that out and help you out. Okay, we'll be back tomorrow talking about superstitions at the table and why you might want to consider them. Bye. So that's just a little taste of what comes out Monday through Friday each morning. Short little episode, only available on Patreon. All patrons, doesn't matter. You come in, pledge a buck, you're good. I think maybe it's pledge $2. I don't know if a dollar is an option. Anyways, pledge $2. But the point being, it doesn't matter how much you pledge. All Patreon supporters have access to that. Patreon.com/abetterlife. Thank you to everybody who supports me over there, and who has over the years, while Patreon has been dormant, while the podcast has gone through some transformations. Appreciate everybody's support and hanging around. This is normally where I would plug Adam Bauer's segment. He unfortunately wasn't able to contribute. Something about a baby and it having important stuff to do. I don't know. I'm not really quite sure what he was talking about. Sounded kind of like a cop-out to me, but whatever. He'll do him. His newsletter just dropped one of the subjects talking about places where you can get cool cocktails for a decent price. Always something any Vegas goer wants, whether you're a gambler or not. I think that's always something that people are interested in. So Adam continues to do well with that newsletter. I think that does it for this week. Next week should be a movie producer, someone who produced a short film, talking about his, of course, you know, talked about him as a gambler, but then also we'll get into writing a fictional story, writing a film that has to do with gambling and how to portray that. And I think, you know, this is especially cool since Mark and I are doing our series to talk about someone who's in that space and who has done the creative work and maybe some of the challenges, maybe some of the fun parts of it. So look forward to talking to that individual. It will likely be streamed. And if it is, I'll post that on Twitter and Facebook to let everybody know. Oh, and I'll throw it on Instagram stories as well. Instagram.com/thebetterlife. I don't know why it said the URL. No one goes to an Instagram URL. We're at The Better Life on Instagram. Okay. I need to wrap this up, get into the feed. Thank you for everybody for listening. Thank you for everybody who supports on Patreon. Thank you for everybody who follows on social media. And thank you to all of you that leave very constructive feedback in the iTunes reviews. I read every one of them, and I'll do everything I can to help make your ears not bleed anymore. Okay. On behalf of Megan Kay, I am Timothy Lawson. Good night, and good luck.